from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a group of friends, all part of Generation Z, sat down to discuss language over margs and guac. Isn't it adorbs, they thought, that the dictionary now includes our fave words like avos and zoodles. But what a time suck to read the dictionary, right? Maybe it's even a little bougie, especially when we can just Instagram everything. Or maybe you agree, maybe you don't. Maybe you're thinking, Evan, I get it. There are new words in the dictionary, and this intro is TLDR. Point taken. This hour, we'll discuss some of the 840 new words that Merriam-Webster added to the dictionary this month. It's a real-time look at the evolution of language. This month's editions emphasize the influence technology and abbreviations have on our lives and language. If you haven't heard some of the words, you will learn something this hour. And if you have, chances are you're part of a subculture that helped push these words into the general vocabulary. So this hour, we'll have some fun with a bunch of randos. Okay, they've all been on the show before, and they are not randos. Joining me in studio is Dan Mulcahy, a creative director for Bush Communications. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Also with us is Amanda Chestnut, artist and communications coordinator at Flower City Arts Center, and also someone who writes arts reviews for City Newspaper. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. Kyle Semmel is executive director for Writers and Books. Kyle, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
I'm going to go over a quiz in a moment here, but any words in that intro stand out to you, Kyle? Are you starting to feel like it's slipping away from you a little here?
I like the word bougie.
you know immediately what that means.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Okay. So that's the one you liked. Anything stand out and you went, wait a second. Did you get the TLDR stuff?
I did not, no.
TLDR? Anybody want to jump in with TLDR?
Too long, don't read.
Too long, didn't read.
Didn't read.
Yeah. Too long, didn't read. So when Kyle sends me an email, I just write him back and I respond, TLDR, brother. And you never know why I didn't actually respond. But now you know.
Now I know.
It's just TLDR. The process here, before we get to the quiz, and we're going to have some fun, and listeners, these are some, I hope it'll be interesting and enjoyable for you to kind of consider, do I know these words? But I want to ask all of you if you think Merriam-Webster should be doing this to begin with, whether bougie or TLDR, randos, and guac. Should that stuff be in the dictionary?
I love it, actually. I think the wonderful thing about language is how supple it is and how it can absorb new species, so to speak, of language. And I'm all for it. I think it may not last. Some of these words may just be flashes in the pan, but at the same time, it is how we speak. It's how language evolves, and I'm all for that evolution.
Yeah, I'm thinking of our friend Maya Abtakian, who couldn't be on the program today, one of the really interesting professors in this town who thinks a lot about language and the evolution of the words we use and the backgrounds and power structures and all these kinds of things. And I think she makes kind of the same point. Well, so what if we're not going to use it in 10 or 20 or 100 years? But so I get stodgy, though, and I'm like, but wait, there's always words of the moment. That doesn't mean they should be in the dictionary. That's the gatekeeper. Is that just me being stodgy? Is that me exercising sort of advantage and privilege there, Amanda? What do you think?
I think that what winds up in the dictionary can sometimes be an example of privilege in a sense, because some of the words that you listed have actually been in use for 10, 15, 20 years even.
Yeah.
So having them being adopted by a certain group of people is the thing that makes them actually move into the dictionary. So I do think that it's important that they wind up there, but I think that that place in the dictionary is also a point of privilege in and of itself, because there are lots of words that don't wind up making that cut that are very they're very specific to subcultures, to cultural groups that use them very regularly, often for many years, and they don't make it into the popular lexicon, and therefore they don't make it into the dictionary. And in some ways, that's a little bit of a loss culturally.
Yeah, a loss and probably a reinforcement of privilege and advantage, because when we talk about so-called professional standards, whether it's hair or language, words, patterns of speaking, actual vocabulary, for a long time in this country, been white people making the rules. So white people slang can get in there pretty easily. But yeah, I take that point. Though I wonder if that's starting to change. Do you feel any sort of current of change with that? More respect for, as you say, subcultures and language and ideas?
I think just looking at the list of words that were let in most recently in 2018 would be a great example of that. Harassa was on the list. That's a thing that's been around for a very, very long time. And it's just being admitted into the dictionary. Latinx is on the list, mm-hmm. Which is a non-gendered form of Latino or Latina. Again, that's something that's been in use by a lot of people, especially in particular cultural subsets, for quite some time. So I do think that there is maybe a trend towards inclusivity, but I don't know if that's necessarily on the part of the dictionary or if it's because we're doing a better job of writing and reading each other's writing. So these words are becoming more prevalent in a wider audience. With social media being what it is, it might just be that they're the words like Latinx. If you have more friends who are Latinx on Facebook, you're going to see that word more often.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point. And I'm looking, Dan Mulcahy, at the list of words that would have been new many decades ago. I mean, when's the last time you heard bippy or boodle or flivver, zounds, hornswoggle, hootenanny? I mean, maybe hootenanny. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I still use hootenanny. Going to a hootenanny this Saturday.
I knew you would.
Yeah.
Zounds feels like I'm watching an episode of Scooby-Doo. But I look at the list of the older words, and then that gets the curmudgeon in me going, come on. Do we really have to be in the... But I'm listening here, and my mind is being slowly broken down by the arguments in favor of adding. How do you feel about adding to the dictionary?
Well, I don't think there's a dictionary anymore. I think there used to be, and it was a big book, and I grew up in a different generation from most of the people here. But yeah, there was a big book that you opened and you looked it up, and it was there. And I think there's urban dictionaries now. There's different contextual opportunities to look words up, but I don't think there's a real... I mean, I don't consult the Merriam-Webster dictionary very often. So I think that is one of the things that kind of got washed away in the digital revolution here, is just that sense of... here are X amount of words, and here are the words we know that we can define, and they're in the dictionary. So I think words are added all the time, come and go. But there's a ton of them here that look interesting. I look at words to use in writing, you know what I mean? I try to come up with words that sound good and have a cool meaning and are current and would be interesting to an audience. And so I look at words just, I kind of like making them up myself. I like to use a hyphen. You know, and just put words together.
I think the point that that Merriam-Webster, that Oxford, that other sort of gatekeepers of language have made is that if the words are used commonly, they are words.
Yeah.
And clarity of communication is really the goal here.
Right.
So we can look down our noses at it, but clarity of communication and ease of communication is valuable. So with that, you guys ready for a little quiz?
Yeah.
See how we do? Mm-hmm. All right, question one. Listeners, follow along with us. Question one, as we do new words. For Father's Day this year, Tina decided to make brunch for her dad. When he sat down for the meal, he realized that there wasn't any silverware. No problem, Tina said. You don't need a fork to enjoy blank. Is it zoodles, haptics, margs, or zooks?
Margs.
You could pick zooks up with your fingers.
You drink margs, right?
Well, what are margs?
Oh.
Margaritas. I'm assuming margaritas, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And you were saying zooks, assuming zooks are...
Zucchinis.
Zucchini, which is correct, yeah. So you're going to go with margs, team? We're going with margs.
I think that's
sure.
Right.
Yeah, the answer is margs. A margarita. According to Merriam-Webster, the first known usage of margs was 1990. So margs... is now official.
Does it say who was the first to use that word?
No. Producer Megan Mack, who created this quiz, is telling me we do not know the first user of margs. But the answer, yes. By the way, zoodles are long, thin strips of zucchini that resemble strings or narrow ribbons of pasta. Okay. And haptics are the use of electronically or mechanically generated movement that a user experiences through the sense of touch as part of an interface, such as on a gaming console or a smartphone. Marg's Margaritas, and Zook's Zucchini. Okay, next question. Question two. After having a few too many Margs, Tina's dad started to get restless. Tina still hadn't served any food, and he was starting to feel... A, bingeable, B, hangry, or C, bougie?
B.
You're going hangry over there.
Hangry.
Hangry, yeah. Okay. Hangry, which means a man of chestnut, hangry.
Hungry and angry.
Irritable or angry because of hunger. You got it. So the answer, yes, is hangry, which is now in the dictionary, according to Merriam-Webster. Bingeable, by the way, having multiple episodes or parts that can be watched in rapid succession. Like, boy, I missed Connections all week. Thank goodness the podcast is so bingeable, is what most people would say, I think. And bougie, short for bourgeois, the term meaning marked by a concern for wealth, possessions, and respectability. Though I want to know, is bougie used ironically or is it used sincerely when you hear bougie?
If I use bougie, it's usually ironic, I think. Is
like, use it in a sentence how you might use it.
I would talk about how much I love seltzer as being kind of bougie. It's kind of bougie, but I still love seltzer, so I'm really okay with it.
So if somebody's like, you ordered Papa John's, I'd be like, no, I ordered Pizza Stop. I went all bougie.
You might have to step up from Pizza Stop to actually hit the bougie mark.
No way. See, that's the ironic part of it, and at least it's not Papa John's, is what I was saying.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So there you go. So that's bougie. How commonly have you guys heard Dan, bougie? Have you heard Kyle? Have you heard it?
Not very often, no.
No? Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to ascertain what it is. And there's usually a pejorative context to it, so.
You think there's usually a pejorative context?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretense kind of.
Okay. Oh, man, I'm going to mispronounce the word. Megan Mack, as I get ready to read question three on your quiz here, please tell me how to pronounce option C before I try to do it, and I will read slowly. Question three on our new words quiz. Tina, he said, would you make me an omelet? You know, your special recipe is my fave. The one with the avos, ribbies, or option C. Take the mic. What's the answer? Tell me the answer here. I don't know how to, just pronounce it in my ear and I'll pronounce, I don't know how to pronounce it. No, you're not going to help me. Well, you could have told me in my ear if you actually know the answer, but she doesn't know. Avos, ribbies, or gochujang? Gochujang.
Avos go in omelets.
And I'm embarrassed. I don't know some of this stuff. So, all right. So, again, I'm going to read the whole sentence again because gochujang. Okay. So, Tina, he said, would you make me an omelet? You know your special recipe is my fave, the one with the avos, ribbies, or gochujang. And Amanda Chestnut is saying avos.
I would go with that too.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know what C is at all. So
yeah, neither ribbies or runs batted in. I think
that's exactly right. It's based on RBI, which is already a dinosaur stat that we're not even using anymore. If you actually know baseball, but anyway, ribbies is RBIs. Avos is an abbreviation for avocados. Oh, avos and guac was part of the answer. So guac is what I don't hear avos used. I hear guac. Do you?
Maybe if you watch Rachel Ray, she loves to shorten words into new words. So,
but guac, I haven't heard. Anybody at the table heard anybody use avos in common usage?
No.
I haven't. Rob, Megan, no. I haven't never heard that. But avos is in the dictionary now, abbreviation for avocados. Guac, of course, guacamole. And gochujang is a spicy paste used in Korean cuisine that is made from red chili peppers, glutinous rice, and fermented soybeans. Cool. I want some. That sounds awesome. All right, question number four. Tina thought that was adorbs. Adorable, of course. Dad, she said, did you read my last letter? I told you I'm only making recipes that are worth blank. Recipes that are worth A, biohacking. Recipes that are worth B, force quitting. Or recipes that are C, worth Instagramming. Okay, Dan Mulcahy, I'm going to turn to you.
Yeah, Instagramming.
Okay, as the least young member of the group, you got that one right away.
Yeah, it's in common language, and the other two don't work. So it was elimination.
Do you Instagram as a verb?
I could. You know, I'm perfectly capable of Instagramming as a verb. I don't do it often, though.
Okay. Do you Instagram?
It's part of my job at the Art Center.
That's... Absolutely. I teed that one up for you.
That is a large part of what I do at Flower City Art Center, yes.
Flower City Art Center, definitely Instagramming. What about you, Kyle Semmel? How much Instagramming do you do?
I tried to do none, and I succeed at that. Yeah.
Why do you try to do none?
There's just too much social media right now, and I've got enough to do on my average day, so it's not part of my job exactly. I let Chris Fanning take care of that. So I will happily avoid Instagram if I can.
Are you okay with Instagramming being in the dictionary?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because that was an easy one to understand there. Forced quitting, by the way, is to force an unresponsive computer program to shut down by using a series of preset keystrokes. Biohacking is biological experimentation as by gene editing or the use of drugs or implants done to improve the qualities or capabilities of living organisms, especially by individuals and groups outside of a traditional medical or scientific research environment. So, yeah, that was sort of an obvious one there, Instagramming as a verb. And that's in Merriam-Webster's official dictionary, although Dan Mulcahy points out there's not really a sort of physical dictionary, tangible dictionary per se anymore. But there you go.
It's a concept.
Next question I kind of gave away earlier, but so you guys will all get it. Tina's dad was embarrassed. "Shoot," he said, "I didn't read it. The letter was blank." And the answer was TLDR, too long, didn't read. But what about the answer, the letter was a time suck? That could work. Or the letter was predictive, as in predictive text, of or relating or usable or valuable for prediction. Well, predictive doesn't really work, but a time suck could. What's a time suck, Kyle Semmel?
That's when you get, this is probably not going to be the best definition of it, but when you get buried in minutia of a thing, like you go on Wikipedia or whatever, and suddenly you're in the rabbit holes and the 20 minutes go by and you've just wasted 20 minutes.
Is it waste, though, if you're really learning?
It can be, though. It really can be waste. And yeah, maybe you're learning something, but I think the question is the quality of what you're learning. And when I go into a Wikipedia page, if I'm looking up something and end up going down into something that I really don't need to know, that's a time suck.
Yeah, I looked up like one bio. I ended up with 30 minutes on the history of mushrooms and insights into communist Cuba. That's a time suck.
And do you retain that information? Yeah. That is the question.
How do I end up going down these rabbit holes? What are the time sucks in your day, Amanda?
Oh, my. What are the time sucks in my day? My cell phone is a giant time suck. That's one of those things. And it's specifically designed to do this. But when you pick it up, you need to look at one thing. And then 20 minutes later, you still haven't looked at that one thing that you intended to look at. So cell phones.
And you've probably forgotten what it is you wanted to look at.
Yes. Yes. Almost always. For me, it's interesting. TLDR, I often see used at the bottom of a text. If it's a particularly long text, I see it used as a way of summarizing the entire thing. So if her letter was, I would say probably the letter, he could have assumed that the letter would be a time suck, but I often see TLDR as it like, oh, this is the part you want to read to because I'm going to summarize all of these other words that you don't want to take the time to read.
That's a great point. Most of the time when you see TLDR, it's not the writer advising, I didn't actually read this. It's usually someone who writes something like, if I emailed you or if I texted you like, hey, I know we're going to go to that party on Saturday, but here's all the reasons why I think it's a waste of time. And I do these paragraphs, and then I realize, wow, I'm sending the longest text ever. And at the end, I just do TLDR, don't waste your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it's used.
TLDR, we're skipping Saturday.
We're skipping Saturday. Yeah. That's interesting. And I also wonder, Dan, should we care if a new term is written more or spoken more? I mean, if it's not, even though I guess people are saying TLDR, Amanda, do they say TLDR more? I usually see it written. I don't say it.
I've never heard it.
I've said.
Only ever read it.
Yeah. Does that matter to us in language? I guess it doesn't, right?
Well, it could. All words enter our consciousness through either being spoken or written, and they have to be written to be analyzed in any way. So it's all about the audience for a word, I think. And so I think it does make a little difference, yeah. And as far as the time suck, you know, with attention deficit on the rise. Social media is, in general, is just an amazing time suck.
Yeah, that's a great point. In fact, it's something that we probably have to teach our kids to grapple with. All right,
exactly.
final question on the quiz, number 6. Wow, Dad, Tina said, I forgot. You're more of a 280 characters kind of guy. That's very Generation Z, the generation of people born in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Very Generation Z of you, Dad. Oh, well, I still think you're the blank. The hophead? The goat? The iftar? Or the rando? No, hold on a sec. This was an easy one for me, but I want to see if Dan and Kyle... I'm assuming Amanda and I are going to have an easier time with this, so I don't know. I assume so. You got this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you repeat the 4?
All right, so, you know... Dad, I still think you're the hophead, the goat, the iftar, or the rando.
I would say the goat there, but I don't think that's right.
Okay.
I would have said the iftar, my first gut.
What is the iftar? You're just guessing.
Yeah, I am guessing at this point. I knew a couple of those, but not iftar. So.
Iftar, Dan, is a meal taken by Muslims at sundown to break the daily fast during Ramadan.
Okay, then.
So. Yeah. So doesn't really work here.
Right.
But goat is something that you thought maybe, but you couldn't figure out why.
It was the only one that made sense to me, even though it doesn't really make sense to me. When I think of the goat, I think of, the best baseball players, best football players of all time. So the greatest of all time, which makes sense in the father context.
Why are you talking yourself out of this? You had it.
Because I see it more in the sports context more. And I think that... better belongs there, to me at least.
But, I still think you're the goat. Totally makes sense. Yeah. You're the greatest, right?
Yes.
Easy.
Yeah, it's goat.
And I do hear that one in decently common usage, because even though he left my Cleveland Cavaliers, LeBron James is still the goat. And the Cleveland Indians have a third baseman this year who the Cleveland Indians Twitter page, when they reference Jose Ramirez, they just put a little icon of a goat. Because his nickname is Goat, greatest of all time. So there you go. Dan, have you ever heard that before, Goat?
You know, Goat, in the sports context for me, as a man of, as you said, least young on the panel here, was the guy who made the ninth inning error. He was the Goat.
Yeah, the Goat was a very pejorative term when
exactly.
I was growing up. You don't want to be the Goat. You know, you're the guy who screwed up. You're the guy who cost
exactly.
the team the game.
Exactly.
You know, and now it's the greatest of all time, but it's an acronym.
The Goat was Ali.
Yeah, there really was. Yeah, the goat. That's true. Ali is the goat. Now, Hophead, by the way, anybody want to take a...
That's got to be somebody who likes craft beer, I would think.
A beer enthusiast. There you go. And it was originally, do you know the original term for Hophead? It was a slang word for a drug addict dating back to 1883. But today, Hophead is almost entirely used for a beer enthusiast. So, yeah. Rando. Dan Mulcahy.
Randomness. Someone who... X impulsively, perhaps.
So if I said, hey, I was just having a conversation, and you know who knew the answer? That's some rando walking down the street.
Yeah, just somebody. The root word there has to be random of some sort, right?
Yeah, we're so desperate to abbreviate that we'll take one letter off.
We just can't even,
the M is just too tiresome. It's got to be rando. And it's not impulsive, it's just a random person, a person who is not known or recognizable.
Right.
But is rando used pejoratively?
Yes. I think more than the word random itself, rando is a pejorative, I think, all the time. I've never heard it used ironically or jokingly, I've always ever heard it as a pejorative.
So in other words, like when you're saying, if I say, hey, I really love your shoes, and you say, yeah, you know who's giving me grief about it? Some rando at the mall.
I was walking down the street and this rando was following me. Yeah, rando is not a thing that you want to be or a thing that you would typically call your father, at least not to his face.
Yes, if your father is a rando, it's a sad thing. So that's more of a pejorative context. You're laughing over there, but don't you love it how words not only get accepted by Merriam-Webster for common usage, but they have a real sort of cultural texture to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a beautiful thing about language. Absolutely.
And it's also difficult I feel like every year that goes by in my life, I feel like my son can drop. He's six. I feel like he can drop stuff that I'm going, I'm not sure I totally get that. And the more he spends time in school, he'll drop stuff. And I'll go, I don't know. Like, you know, and is this just going to keep happening to me, Dan?
It might. Yeah, it has happened to me over time. But I really tune into that. I've got a 16 and a 25-year-old. And I'm listening to what the 16-year-old tells me because I want to use those words in writing where my audience is appropriate, you know?
Don't come off, though, as some rando who's just sort of creeping on a crowd trying to look young. You know, just.
Well, they can't see me when they read copy. You know?
No, that is true. Amanda Chestnut, how valuable is it to try to kind of stay on top of changing culture, changing sort of common usage?
I think that it is really important. I think that it's important for me personally. It's something that I enjoy doing because I like words so much. But I think that it's also important to know what people around you are saying, and understanding that cultural texture that you mentioned, understanding the nuance of the words is really only going to be gained through using them in discussion and seeing how other people use them in discussion. I remember talking about how I am Gen Z and not a millennial, it took me about a half an hour to learn how to use the word shade, as in to throw shade or to have shade. I didn't get it. One of my colleagues who is a millennial had to take some time to explain it to me because it just would not make sense. So, and I don't know if that one's in the dictionary yet or not.
I would assume it is. Mm. It's so common. But I don't know.
It was last year.
It was one of last year's words. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, I think that it's important because it is a common popular word.
Yeah.
So taking the time to actually understand how it's used and what the nuance and context of a word like that is, I think, necessary for talking to people other than, you know, the six or seven people you might talk to every single day.
It was officially added last year, according to producer Megan Mack, who knows everything about this stuff. So shade was added last year. Kyle Semmel, you got to use shade in a sentence now.
It's easy to throw shade at the Buffalo Bills right now.
Indeed it is.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. So I'm really enjoying this, and we've got other new words that are on the list that we don't have official quizzes for, but after our only break of the hour, we'll not only get to those words. I got an email from a listener named Patrick who says, Evan, with your discussion this hour on language, I'm curious as to what leads a language to change. I understand the efficiency of using acronyms such as LOL, BRB, WTF, why the face, as direct messaging communications increases in use. But is it really necessary to say zooks over zucchini? What is the benefit? What is also lost by this shift? From Patrick. So the question of how it comes up is interesting, but is there an actual benefit? Randos instead of random. Zooks over zucchini. Guac instead of guacamole. Is there a benefit? Our guests are going to help us answer that question. Amanda Chestnut, an artist and communications coordinator at Flower City Art Center, and someone who writes arts reviews for City Newspaper. Kyle Semmel, executive director for Writers and Books. Dan Mulcahy, creative director for Bush Communications. We'll talk more about new words in the dictionary coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence is bringing in a couple of experts whose work focuses on healing the differences and divisions between men and women. You will meet them and hear what they have to offer in our first hour. In our second hour, another police community relations and a forum intended to bring officers closer to the people they serve. We'll talk about it Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We get a phone call. This is Michelle in Rochester. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just listening to the conversation and feeling like an old fogey, realizing that some of the words you were using, I only just learned by hanging out with my teenage nieces in LA recently. But I wonder if because most of these are coming from a younger generation, is part of the intention to kind of create a mechanism of identifying insiders and outsiders? It almost felt like, you know, if I wanted to try to use these, it would feel inauthentic or like cultural appropriation. And it's just sort of like there's a desire to be in. And so is this part of what drives the evolution of language, is just this perpetual need to kind of create something that the older crowd doesn't get?
Yeah, Michelle, stay there because I want to follow up with you. This is a very interesting and a good question. But before, let me start with Amanda Chestnut on that. Do you think that it's almost cultural appropriation as we get older if we try to use this kind of language? Or is there sort of a value to it?
I don't know necessarily if cultural appropriation would be the right phrase, because I'm not sure if there's a specific age-based demographic that is a cultural subset. Like, I'm not sure if boomers can actually culturally appropriate from millennials. I don't know if that's how that works. I do think that a lot of these words wind up initiating in cultural subsets because of that isolation, and maybe it's in part because it's an isolated subset, and maybe in part to have a kind of coded language. But I don't know if as that word disperses into the popular usage that would necessarily qualify as appropriation.
Now, what about in-group signaling? Do you think that this is sort of a way of culturally identifying, whether it's by age or different other...
It is. And you see it a lot. One of the really interesting places where you can trace that is actually in LGBTQ culture. Words like shade, for example, there's lots and lots of them, have originate in LGBTQ culture. And as they kind of get disseminated into broader culture, new words are evolved that can belong just to that culture. So I think it speaks more to the fluidity and flexibility of language than necessarily that things are specifically taken. As one thing gets absorbed, then another thing is born. It's just that rebirth, that regrowth that happens naturally.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, I think to Michelle's point, there's probably some signaling or sort of... but this is just natural. And there's no way to perfectly demarcate a period when, you know, your generation's kids were saying X and then my mother was asking me, how come you say... you know, cool for hot. How come you say bad for good? I mean, you remember those conversations growing up. I think it's probably just natural.
It is. And it's to something you said earlier about the formality of the former dictionary. And the dictionary really, in my mind, has become a style guide. So it's not really this formal body of words that have a definition with the little syllables broken out. It's what's current, you know, what's in use. And how writers appropriate it and how groups appropriate a given word to make a point and really to identify themselves. I think Michelle's making a great point. It's really a smart point.
Can I chime in real
quick?
Sure. I want to clarify what I mean by cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
I don't think an outsider can look at it and proclaim it one way or another just based on who's in what group. It has to do with more how whether or not you're rooted in authenticity versus kind of a more cynical use. You know, I'm going to learn your language so that I can manipulate you somehow, as opposed to like, I want to make a genuine connection with you. So I don't think you can apply any single litmus test from the outside. I think it just more has to do with, you know, am I artificially incorporating these words into my vocabulary to create a false connection as opposed to something that's more deeply rooted in real connection.
Like when Homer Simpson said to Bart, would you say I'm so bad I'm actually good? And Bart's going, please don't. Please don't do this. Just don't. You know. And,
that connection is not there.
It's not authentic. It's not authentic. Kyle, you want to weigh in on this too? Go ahead.
Yeah, 2 points I want to say. I go back to Michelle's call. I really do think, and I was thinking of this before, that you have to be very authentic when you do it. So, like, I couldn't, I don't think, reasonably say certain of these words that we were saying simply because it's not who I am. It would be false, and it would sound false, and it would actually be an embarrassment to me if I were to go in public and use the word rando in any sort of connection, in any connection whatsoever, because it's just not me. The second thing I would like to say is defend the Merriam-Webster here and defend dictionaries, too, because I still use the online dictionary frequently. I think it matters the different nuances of a certain word, which any word you could just pick. I mean, just the fact that we looked up cosmopolitan before we got over here into the studio, and I think that it's important that people continue to think of words as having different kinds of meanings within each, subset of letters that are formed into its word, and you have 2-3 different meanings for that word. And I think we need to maintain the dictionary as much as possible and support the dictionary. Even if it's an online dictionary, we need to continue to think in terms of words having meaning. And sometimes if we don't have the right meaning, we screw up a lot in big ways. And so I think that it's easy enough with these new words because they're fairly tame, and they don't have the kind of, at least the ones that you've named so far, they're more like social media speak, essentially, is what we've addressed here today. But there are words that are have political consequences. There are words that have economic consequences, and we should really be careful about how we're using them.
Yeah, and so what I wanted to follow up with Michelle is I think your point about the way that people might try to learn a new set of language that gets adopted and sometimes clumsily do that. I've had the same issue sometimes with understanding grammar and text, and it was my colleague Veronica Volk on this program who taught a great lesson to me just in the nuance of the word hey. So if you text somebody and you write H-E-Y, that's it. That's like, hey. If you text somebody H-E-Y, period, that's like a little more urgent or serious or stern. H-E-Y-Y-Y may be something a little more forward, even mildly sexual or flirty. And H-E-Y, all caps, but nothing else to it, means something else. So, but I had never thought of it that way. That's one word. And that's something that almost organically came as more people began to text and more people learned for looking for efficient ways. And I wonder, Michelle, if you find yourself at times going, wait, you texted me this, and they're going, well, I didn't mean that, or I totally misinterpreted just based on grammar or how something is constructed in a text.
I think human beings are driven to create nuance to help connect more clearly with each other. And I find the evolution of how we're texting each other to be fascinating. I mean, this whole universe of emojis to get our right hemispheres involved in all the nonverbal dialogue that we've lost when we're not communicating face to face or even using our voices. So, yes, we've been very creative at inventing ways to layer nuance into something that seems very simple. And, I think as people are, I think the point that maybe some of these abbreviations are evolving out of, we just don't want to use our thumbs to type out bourgeois. We
can't spell bourgeois either.
Exactly. It's tricky. Bourgeois would trip me up every time. Great, Michelle, thank you for the phone call. I really appreciate that. Really interesting stuff to think about. And I think when it comes to this notion of ease of communication and the way it's natural, the interesting and weird thing is that what becomes really organic and authentic for, maybe younger people who are texting a lot, just the lesson on the word hey, is something that has to be learned for people who are not necessarily texting as much or part of that. So it becomes more efficient for one group, but it becomes inefficient to communicate across groups if someone from a different group doesn't really know the texture or the nuance here. Which brings us back to the question we had before the break that we had from Patrick, which is that, is it really necessary to shorten words like that? Is there something valuable in the word rando or guac or what have you? And let me ask all of our guests that. So what do you think, Amanda Chestnut?
I think that having abbreviations, sometimes it really is just silly. I think that sometimes it's used as part of a brand for an individual. Like if you look at somebody like Rachel Ray, who uses EVOO, and she says guac, and she says avo, and that's really part of what her brand is. Her language is very much a part of her language around food specifically is very much a part of how you can identify what, like, if you were to look at the text of her show, you would read it in her voice because she has such a distinctive speech pattern that it really is part of what her brand is. So sometimes it's that we use an abbreviated word to create a new meaning for that longer version of the word, or to have a subtle definition or a subtle distinction from the longer definition of the word, like the difference between rando and random.
And that's where I think it's really interesting and valuable.
Right. So it's, I think that they do wind up happening for many different reasons. But I don't think that because we use the word rando, the word random is going to disappear.
Especially as you point out, they actually mean something mildly different. Rando doesn't just mean random.
Right.
It's a subset of random.
Right.
In a pejorative and creepy sense. Yeah, which is really valuable and more efficient. So that's where there can be real value.
And the other thing about that is that we wouldn't say randoms. You know, we wouldn't go around saying some randoms.
I think we would, actually.
I don't think so.
Would we?
I would never say that. When was the last time you using your example from before, when you're in the mall and somebody says this is some rando, you would never use random there.
I think randoms is the plural of rando, though.
Yeah, but that may be so, but I've never used randoms.
No, randos is the plural. Just stick an S on the end, leave the M out.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. See, this is why am I relying on myself here? No, interesting. See, look, this didn't take long. I jumped on social media and people are posting pictures. Four pictures, a woman posting four selfies, and she says four randoms. Four pictures of herself there.
Four random selfies is different than four randos.
Oh, randos, because rando is person. Okay, see? That's a good point.
Walk down Monroe Ave and take four pictures. You got four randos. Four random selfies is not the same thing.
Okay, see?
Is she using randoms, though?
Yeah, she used randoms, but she's describing something, not four different people, to Amanda's point. Mm. So, okay. Fascinating how language is evolving here. Let me read some of the other words that are on this list here. Airplane mode, we know what airplane mode is now. It's in the dictionary. Mise en place, culinary process, when you sort of prep and get everything laid out first before you start cooking. That's in the dictionary now. As we mentioned, Latinx is now in the dictionary, a gender non-specific term for Latino or Latina. Tent city, which is unfortunately in this town, a term that we have seen in recent years and a term that I think a lot of people would recognize. Self-harm, the act of purposely hurting oneself, usually by cutting or burning the skin as an emotional coping mechanism.
Actually shocking that's new.
Well, same with tent city.
But to the point about tent city or self-harm, those are concepts that may be years or even a few decades old, but that's sometimes how fast it takes to get. You know, like it was just, I think, 2 years ago that Kodak moment got in the dictionary. And I'm looking across the street at Kodak, and there ain't no Kodak over there anymore. Like, it would have to be Canon moment or not Kodak moment. And it's, so sometimes it actually adopts a little more slowly to where it might outlive its usefulness by the time it gets adopted. Whereas something like this, I think self-harm is going to be with us for a long time. Tent city is a term, probably be with us for a long time, but it does take some time to get adopted. If you want to take a look at the list, we'll try to post for you on our various platforms if you want to take a look at some of the new terms in the dictionary this year. Joan and Henrietta is next on the phone. Go ahead, Joan.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I have heard that some of these less well-known acronyms have been used in hiring processes to try to identify a person's age. Any comments?
So, describe it again. Using acronyms or using this kind of newer speech?
Yeah, the newer speech in emails especially, and the acronyms that, you know, we all know what LOL is, but there are a lot of others that, depending on a person's age, they wouldn't really know. And that in some hiring situations, when a person doesn't know different acronyms, they make assumptions about a person's age.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, thanks, Joan. Dan Mulcahy, have you ever found yourself going, I'm communicating with this person. I've never met them. I'm going to make an assumption based on age, but just based on how they're communicating.
Well, you might base your assessment of them by the fact that they're wearing dungarees or galoshes. You know what I mean? So, I mean, those are examples where you could. I liked Kyle's point earlier.
What is this dungarees?
Tell me what dungarees are. Tell me what...
Is that jeans or is that like overalls?
Yeah, those are like jeans. I think overalls, that kind of thing. My grandmother used to say that.
Okay. That's what I would have guessed.
Yeah. But Kyle made a great point about, you know, using words appropriately. I think, you know, when someone of one generation uses words that are, again, to my point, I think this is a style guide now. It's not the database that you're referring to. But it is a style guide. And I think, you know, it's like me wearing a hairpiece. It's like when I start saying bougie, you know, you're so bougie. It's like, oh, no, Dan, don't do that. Right? Right?
No.
It's like an ill-fitting comb over, don't you think?
You're saying you'd stand out if you're using terms
out.
Where you're trying too hard?
Yeah, but.
But I don't begrudge you the sort of the interest in learning how certain terms are used. And if you're among settings where... I don't know who you work with, who you're talking to, your kids, your friends. You've got people going a lot of different circles. Maybe these terms come up. And if rando or bougie or something is sort of natural, I got no problem, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
I could be wrong.
I could see them being used as part of the hiring process, not necessarily as a signifier of age, but a signifier of culture. If you are in a company that wants to have that type of language be part of your marketing consistently, you want to bring in people who are capable of reading and speaking in that language. So it would be, I think, you know, because I know people of all ages who use words like bougie and rando. So I think that it would be, while it might be more beneficial to younger people because, if, as we've discussed, sometimes the cultural subset that is developing language as a signifier to, as an exclusive signifier for communication purposes, tends to be younger. That's, I don't think, necessarily so exclusive that it would mean that if your company is using those words in communication, that you are only looking for younger people. Mm. I think what it more would mean is that you are looking for people who are capable of reading and speaking in that language, because that is what your company is and that is what your brand is. So you want to be bringing in people that are capable of reading at that language component. Like, I even though I know all these words, I don't necessarily talk like that and I don't market like that. And if I saw a company advertising for jobs with that kind of language, I might think twice about applying to it, because it might not necessarily be the kind of environment where I would necessarily fit in or feel comfortable, because that's not how my use of language works.
Oh, interesting. You're nodding over.
Well, I'm just, you're describing a situation where, you know, we're being separated by our language, and possibly to the caller's point about being discriminatory. So I think it's kind of interesting. I don't think it's, I think she's raising a good point. It's possible, but I think you have to, if you're not there with the person to hear their tone of voice, to see their mm-hmm. expression, hey.
Yeah.
You know? It's
hey.
Right? It can be fraught, making that kind of too much of a judgment. Maybe.
Exactly. That's one of the problems with texting. Imagine having a text that's too long to read. I mean, that is in and of itself a development in the recent past.
Oh, man, you and I should start texting, because now that I know that voice text is a thing, we can do some long texts.
That's true. That's.
I'm now the guy who's like, who would ever type in a text? What year is this?
There you go.
So, Kyle, let me start to close the program with a conversation that came to mind. The last time we talked language in a similar way was right before I went with WXXI and the Travel Club to Spain. And on that trip, I had a really good conversation with a woman who has taught and thought a lot about language and feels really sort of careful to give up some of the standards that she felt, you know, are really important. And I was like, we were at like two different points, but I really respect her. And I think maybe in the middle is this idea that don't just judge somebody based on what their text looks like, based on a word or two, or even the grammar of a text. Communication and the ease of communication has changed a lot. At the same time, you know, we should still be interested in asking people to write what we would call properly or whatever. You know, I'm very careful with that term, and I understand that's all a separate discussion. But writing for publication is different than texting, which is different than talking. And that understanding that difference and appreciating it is still valuable. We shouldn't just narrowly focus on what's good communication, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think people have got to, if they haven't already, they're getting used to basically writing in different voices for different things. So, you know, when you text, whether you text your friends or your parents, you're texting a very different language than if you were writing a letter, a novel, an email, whatever it is. It's just different language. And I think people are kind of acclimated to that at this point because so much of social media, somebody mentioned emojis earlier, so much of social media and texting has changed the way we speak and write over the last 10, 15 years to the point where we now have to use emojis, I think, to soften some of the language that we, or even to clarify and to simplify some of the language we use in texting. So, for example, you can send a text to somebody, and sometimes the tone of voice is very different and very off-putting. But when you put an emoji in, like a smiley face, you get a sense of that the tone is not maybe as sharp as you think it is without that emoji. And so we've got to the point now where we have to use emojis for certain text, let's
say. And there's different tools of getting to more precision, you know, so the person who's receiving the language is going to understand it more precisely. Yeah. And which is, you know, so we don't look down at emojis in a text message. So, now, really interesting stuff. And again, well, all these new words in the dictionary, more than 800. Thanks to producer Megan Mack for taking the time to put together a little language quiz for us. Everyone did pretty well, I think. Very, very well. And our thanks to Kyle Semmel, Executive Director for Writers and Books. Nice to have you back here as always.
Thank you for having me.
And Dan Mulcahy, Creative Director for Bush Communications. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
A lot of fun. Amanda Chestnut, Artist and Communications Coordinator at Flower City Art Center. Nice to see you here. Thank you. Our thanks to Rob Braden, Engineer, Megan Mack, who's the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, TLDR. We'll see you tomorrow.